This program is a paid commercial announcement and in no way represents the views of WPHT or its management.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Recovery Radio. My name is Steve Martirano. We're here on Saturdays. This time, we talk about the disease of addiction. But most importantly, we want to remind people that there's a road to recovery. Many roads, as a matter of fact, because millions of people manage to get sober and remain that way. It's important to keep that in mind because I know most of the news about substance abuse is grim. Recovery Radio is sponsored by Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers, about which more a little bit later. We begin today with an interesting topic that we've touched upon in the past on Recovery Radio, but we're going to do a bit of a deeper dive on it now. You know, in a different context, somebody once said it takes a village to do something. I think that's particularly true of the disease of addiction. It takes a village very often to fight this disease. One of the first things it seems to me that happens to families when this disease visits them is that they go into a kind of defensive crouch. They circle the wagons. They're confused, obviously frightened, and don't know where to turn. This is why support, whether it's within the family or in the community or in the town, is critical if anybody expects to survive the disease of addiction. To that end, we welcome Donna DeLuca with us. Donna is calling from her home in Connecticut. She knows what I'm talking about from personal experience. And I don't know to what extent Donna's family got into that circle the wagons defensive crouch, but they're sure out of it now. They've been out of it for several years as people who are actively in their community helping others fight the disease of addiction through support groups that they have formed. The umbrella name is CARES, and we'll find out about that as well. We welcome Donna DeLuca to Recovery Radio. Hi, Donna.
Hi, Steve. I'm so happy to be joining you today.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Did I get any of that right? My notion that no one sees this disease coming, and when it does, people really just don't know what to do.
That is the hallmark of the disease of substance use disorder. People who are, quote unquote, normal families, good upbringing, various socioeconomic backgrounds, absolutely don't see it coming. And we have been so shrouded for years in that guilt and shame, that stigma that encompasses it. Even if you had indications that this was something that was happening within the context of your family, it would be a very tough thing to acknowledge it.
I know it's one of the most extraordinary things I've noticed over the years of interviewing people whose families have been visited by this awful thing, and that even, I mean, you're right about it, it's an equal opportunity affliction. Some very smart people behave, unfortunately, in the wrong way here now. But this other notion that, you know, the instinct immediately is to feel shameful is just debilitating. It stops anybody from getting any help right in their tracks, correct?
It's actually really paralyzing. You know, our reality, our family was, for all intents and purposes, from the outside looking in, a very normal, well-adjusted suburban family, Newtown, Connecticut. My children played Little League baseball. We went to Mass on Sundays. We had family dinners. They understood what family was all about. They're good students. And yet, the disease struck, and you know it comes, you know, sometimes without warning, and then, you know, sometimes there are subtle warnings. But it is really paralyzing to know that this disease is curable, and yet, and if signs and symptoms are caught early, there's a way to intervene with a loved one who might be afflicted. But it's what shrouds the disease that really is actually paralyzing, and it keeps everyone sick. And that is that terrible stigma that does not accompany other afflictions. You've heard this so many times before, I'm sure, that if your loved one, if someone in your family was stricken with cancer or diabetes, there wouldn't be this lack of ability to talk out loud about it, to reach out for help. And vice versa, the community, even family members, well-meaning though they might be, may, jump in with no help or the wrong kind of help when they hear it's substance use disorder or addiction. There is just this black mark, and there has been for so many years, that keeps people really suffering silently, and it needs to change.
Yeah, as you so perfectly described, the stigma still attached to the disease, it also leads to something else. Rather than try to overcome the stigma of it, I guess families that see it coming when they do fall into a denial pattern, right? No, this can't be that. It's got to be something else.
Right. The most powerful thing that you could have said is that that element of denial, where you see clear as day signs and symptoms right in front of you. It could be things like lethargy, just my child's always tired, my child's fallen asleep at the dinner table, my child's not getting up for school,
I don't like their new friends, all that stuff, right?
How do you, friend group changes, yeah. Right. And then we make excuses. We actually believe, it's that they stayed up too late, or there's any number of good reasons why behaviors like that can change, and we can stay mired in denial, because it is a protective mechanism. Denial is protective.
It's how to save yourself and the family. Yeah, Donna DeLuca is our guest. She joins us from Connecticut, where she has, 2015, I believe, created something called the CARES Group. We'll find out what they do right now. But Donna, take us in a couple of minutes before we have to take our first break here now into your situation. When this disease visited your family, I'm sure you recall, were your instincts typical of what we've been talking about? What did you do first thing when you realized this problem had visited your home?
Absolutely. I was typical of everything that we just mentioned. My reality was I was the principal at our local elementary school, little Catholic elementary school, and my 19-year-old son was an IV heroin user. So here I was, an answer person. I was a leader in the community, and my son was experiencing the terrible effects of a hopeless addiction. So everything that goes with that, which usually is everything psychosocial, they lie, cheat, and steal. There were arrests, names in the paper. And my instinct and my behavior was, I can confess this, was just all wrong. It was all about, oh my gosh, how can you shame yourself and the family, rather than, oh my gosh, my sick kid. Mm-hmm. There has to be, something that we can do to help. And so when my oldest child was in trouble with the law, we drove from the police station to the first therapist that we could find that would, help to uncover the issues. But it was still devastating. It was months and months before I could talk out loud to somebody about what was going on with him. But it was even longer still before I was able to get help for myself.
Yeah.
And that was that was my salvation, really.
Well, Donna, what was the family dynamic like? When you say you had difficulty for the longest time even recognizing the problem, admitting that it occurred, much less talking about it, was that dynamic also going on within the family? Was this something that you guys didn't talk about as well?
We knew that something was terribly, terribly wrong, but it was really hard to pinpoint what to do about it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We, you know, I would say that as much as we're a loving family, this really threw us for a loop. And so, and I'm sure, you know, this is another hallmark of the disease of addiction, is that my husband and I were an intact family. We've been married now for 38 years, but, you know, at the time, we were completely polarized. So I would see something, and that you know, finding paraphernalia or smelling, you know, pot or, you know, just any number of different things I would stumble upon, and it would be, there would be excuses made or explaining it away, or because you just don't know what to do, it becomes easier, I think, to just, you know, bury one's head. And so as I got more agitated and anxious, our relationship became extremely polarized, and, you know, there was even blame there, you know, one spouse blaming the other for not seeing it, contributing to it, causing it, you know.
Sure.
You go to places that really are very counterproductive. They don't do anything to help the situation or mitigate the situation.
Welcome back to Recovery Radio. We're on the telephone from Connecticut with Donna DeLuca. Donna has seen the disease of addiction up close and very personal in her own life and her home, her family, as she's been describing to us. Out of that came the organization she founded in 2015 called the CARES Group, which is a support group that helps other people who find themselves in a similar situation. So Donna, you're right. You're the sort of the poster family for how overwhelmingly people unfortunately react to this disease when they find out about it. So once the family comes together, if they ever do, around what needs to be done, how important is it to get the family members, who are, after all individuals with their own problems, on the same page about seeking recovery?
Sure. We have found, Steve, that over the last 17 years, so I've been doing this work for 17 years in one form or another. My first nonprofit organization was formed for this very reason, and CARES was formed in 2015 with my second son. So we had four children, two of whom are afflicted with substance use disorder. What we learn is that when the family members become educated, they become empowered, denial ceases, empowerment begins. This is when real healing can take place. And I think the most sacred thing about what our groups do when they bring the loved one, that person who is committed to their loved one's recovery, is when they come into the group, and they, of course, come in thinking that they're going to fix their loved one, and they realize very quickly that the group is about them and their recovery. I often refer to myself as being in recovery myself, because I have been hopelessly and sometimes helplessly addicted to my kids' addictions. It was inconceivable to me that Matt's, my second son, that he ever began using substances, because his older brother, 4 years older, was, you know, so sick. And it wasn't until the groups and the skilled facilitation of the groups helped me to really understand how, you know, I didn't cause it, I can't cure it, I can't control it, but I sure as heck was contributing to, or even sometimes exacerbating, my kids' substance use disorder. I would, that the negative behavior patterns that I developed, the mindset that was, you know, all about denial and guilt and shame and despair and fear. Oh my goodness, fear kept me sick, and I would say it's one of the overriding paralyzing factors among our group participants. Is we, when we do things, when we make decisions, or when we react out of fear and anxiety, and we often do when substance use disorder is what our kids, you know, are afflicted with. Because of course we fear the ultimate, you know, demise of our children. We fear their death. And when we make decisions based on that fear, it doesn't have a good outcome. So when we create distance between ourselves and the disease, and we create a compassion for our loved one, and we look at them as sick, not bad, then the dynamic, the whole dynamic changes.
Of course, that's
and then behavior patterns change.
Yeah, of course, that's therein lies the rub, that distance you're talking about creating so that everybody can get healthy. Involves, in the case of mom, very often doing counterintuitive things, correct?
Oh, absolutely.
It's hard for people to go, my acting like mom all along has not helped. In fact, it's contributed to this. I got to stop acting like mom. That's tough, right?
Absolutely. And when the veteran group members who share freely what has worked for them in their situations, and they talk about their experiences, when they make suggestions that are completely counterintuitive, which means, you know, they seem unnurturing, they seem, we've heard it feels like abandonment if I tell my child, my 27-year-old child, that he can't live in my house anymore, or that we're not going to help pay for his cell phone or his car insurance, or, you know, contribute to, you know, money, or even other creature comforts. It is absolutely counterintuitive, and it's those very things that may work for one child in the family that are absolutely feeding the addiction in another child. And it's really very important to eke those things out and be able to have someone understand that, yeah, although it doesn't feel good, and we never use the word easy in any of our groups, is that this is our work. We have to be able to look at this in a different way. And sometimes I've heard people just refer to, you know, I'm going to borrow your words because I don't own them myself, and I'm going to use your words. See how that works.
Yeah, that's a great answer.
And, you know, it does. Yeah. You know, ultimately they see the ending results, the much more positive than continuing in the same negative ways.
Great way to describe it. Donna DeLuca is our guest on the telephone. We're talking about the crucial nature, a need for support in the family when the disease of addiction arrives. Steve Martorano with you, Recovery Radio, the name of the program. We're here on Saturdays at this time. We're talking about the disease of addiction. We are able to do that because of the support provided by the sponsor, Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers. Listen, I could go on at length, and sometimes I do, about their reputation for providing treatment. They are world class, and they're justifiably proud of what they do. That's not why they sponsor this program, and I mean that sincerely. They can answer your questions anytime. They're not here to sell you anything. They could save some people's lives, though. So we give you the phone number as an informational tool, and we hope you never have to use this phone number, frankly. But if you have any questions about the disease of addiction or the treatment you're getting or not getting, any questions you've heard about on the program, you can give them a call, and the people at Retreat will answer the questions for you. So, again, write the number down, and I hope you never have to use it. But if you do, it could mean a great deal. 855-859-8808. That's how you reach Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers, 855-859-8808. Donna DeLuca has been talking to us about her family's story. She has four children, two of whom had substance abuse problems for many, many years, serious ones. Her family went through what many families do and came out the other side. Now she has, in fact, for the past 14 or 15 years, spent most of her time fighting the disease of addiction, helping other people, forming support groups to combat this disease. Latest of which is something founded back in 2015 called the CARES Group. Tell us about the creation of CARES, Donna.
So CARES was really an offshoot or an extension of what I needed. And selfishly, I found myself absolutely drowning in self-pity and in despair until I decided that it wasn't working for me anymore. So I sought out a parent-focused support group, and I naturally turned to, you know, what's tried and true, and I found a parent-focused Al-Anon meeting in the lower county from where I lived. And it took me about an hour to get there. The meeting was 2 hours and an hour home. I didn't have that kind of time. I loved the meeting. I felt, okay, I could really relate. These people are parents. They're going through exactly what I'm going through. We can't divorce our kids. We can't cast them aside. So I really felt, you know, at home there. And one of the local agencies, counseling agencies, knew that I was in search of, you know, bringing a group like this to our own community. At that time, our Newtown community was really sick and suffering, and we had the distinction of having lots of young people. It was the advent of prescription medication abuse. It was the advent of oxycodone on the streets of Newtown. It was pretty rampant. That in turn led to heroin. And in our little beautiful bucolic Newtown community, we had, you know, we had heroin. We had, our kids were smoking it, our kids were injecting it, and they were dying. And that was a long time ago. So I felt that I needed to bring something closer because I thought, oh my gosh, what about all of the parents of, you know, my kids' friends and then those in, you know, neighboring communities? And so we began with a facilitator who was a trained substance abuse counselor. And she said, what do you want? And I said, well, I love the Al-Anon model, but I would really love to have our group formed in a way that we had trained facilitation, we had a skilled substance abuse counselor, and that we allowed crosstalk, because I just felt that with the skilled facilitation that crosstalk could be managed. And so that's what we did. And the first family support group was born almost 17 years ago. From there, fast forward 2015, my second son, Matt, 3 years clean and sober, he said, why don't we bring the model into other communities, and maybe we can do this together. I can bring the recovering addict perspective. You can do what you do with the families and the family groups. And so we formed CARES, which is an acronym for Community Addiction and Recovery Education and Support. And we opened our first group, you know, outside of Newtown in that year, and currently we have 6 support groups running in various communities surrounding our area, our general area, and each of which is attended by between 15 and 25 people a week. But in addition, we found that people are still longing for certain things that, in at least in our state, are gaps, and that is access to treatment, that is aftercare, that is, oh my goodness, trying to mitigate the insurance obstacles. So what we do as part of our day job is to work with families of those who may have heard about us and haven't yet attended one of our support groups. They may be attending our support groups and just need information about how to get their loved one treatment, whether that be weekly counseling, an intensive outpatient program, a residential program, detox, aftercare. We have been able over the years to really develop a bunch of good providers that have worked extremely well for all families. And so we will not stop until that individual and that family gets served properly and they find the right course of treatment for them. And so it could be, you know, from just a simple assessment, somebody walking in and saying, you know, my 16-year-old is smoking too much pot, to my child, and that's the difference between, you know, 16 years ago and today. Today, a family member might come in and say, my child overdosed 3 times, had to be revived by Narcan, and we need help yesterday.
Yeah, Donna, you know what's interesting about hearing you describe how your CARES groups work? It's I think too many people think, look, the idea of a support group is a pretty old idea. There's support groups for everything and always have been. With regard to the disease of addiction, I think too often people on the outside look at a support group as a kind of pity party, a bunch of people run in there and share how bad things are, or, you know, help each other by saying how good things are, and that's all well and good. But you just described a resource. You guys are a resource. Mm-hmm. People come into a place like CARES, and I guess they have some really practical issues. My insurance company's driving me nuts. How do I know what a good rehab place is? I mean, these are pretty nuts and bolts questions, right?
They absolutely are. And although we don't have a set curriculum, because they really, and they're not a clinical group in the formal sense, we definitely process concepts like codependency and denial, perseverance, self-care. Oh my goodness, that's a big one.
How about the mental? How about the mental health component here? Do your lots of family members aren't even aware that there can be something else going on, right?
Absolutely. If I were to ask the question, you know, how many of your loved ones, and I've done this in every group multiple times, how many of your loved ones have been diagnosed with an underlying mental health issue? And, you know, they may look perplexed, but then you ask, okay, depression, anxiety, ADHD, big one, 100% of the hands go up. So there is such a close link between, you know, an underlying mental health issue and self-medication or substance use, because, you know, and Matt will tell you, he had a drug solution, you know, to his drug problem. He had a drug solution to the problem that was really underlying all of it. And, you know, it worked for him until it didn't work. And that was because, you know, he, you know, felt less than for most of his adolescence. And, you know, those are really hard things for parents to delve into. And that's what we invite people to do it in a way that, you know, is not judgmental, that is freeing, really. Mm-hmm. It's liberating to be able to say, sometimes they're saying, you know, my child is an addict or my child is addicted for the first time ever in their lives, that they've not been able to say this anywhere in any other place, even among close family.
Yeah, just that alone shows the importance of getting into a support system like you've been describing. We got a minute here before we break again. You say you had 4 children, 2 who had substance abuse problems, 2 I presume did not. Have you ever pondered why that was?
Well, it's this simple. For my oldest child, she's my foster child, and she has a different genetic background and is probably one of the most resilient individuals I have ever known in my life. Amanda is 44 and we acquired her. She was a student of mine. And my youngest is 18, so we have all generations accounted for there. And, you know, that's such a great question, Steve, because Andrew's 18, but his siblings, his brothers, are 35 and 31, and they have helped us parent Andrew differently. And that has been such a gift to us. I believe that, you know, genetics play a huge role in the disease, but Andrew has known since birth, really. He was 2 years old when his oldest brother, we invited him to live elsewhere. Mm-hmm. Andrew was two, and my oldest son was 19, and he's never lived home again because it wasn't healthy for him or for us. And so he's known about the disease of addiction his whole life.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, whether or not he carries the gene, he certainly understands that his parents will love and support him through anything. So there would never be the overreaction, the need to lie about feelings or lie about anything. Every one of the mistakes that I made raising the other two in relation to their diseases, I am happy to say, because they have validated me, that I'm not doing the same thing.
You worked that part out. Donna DeLuca from her home in Connecticut, where she is really been dedicated to helping people cope with the disease of addiction when it visits their family. Visits a horrible way to put it. She is all about family support when addiction occurs. CARES, CARES, the CARES group, are the support groups that she has founded, and it's spreading. And there are how many now, Donna, in your area?
We have six now in the greater Danbury, Connecticut area.
And if people listening here now, and they can listen to this program not only locally here in the Philadelphia area, but, you know, we can stream this and hear it any place. If somebody's sitting around and they finally got to that point where you know, they've moved beyond the defensiveness and the shame and all that, and they'd like to form a group like that, can they contact you? Can they do that easily?
They absolutely can contact us. We would be happy to speak with them about establishing a CARES group in their area.
And you have a website that is the CARES group, oneword.org, is that right?
Yeah, it's the CARES group, so it's thecaresgroup.org.
And finally, we had hoped that you would be joined during today's program by Matt, your son, who is now, did you say 4 years now sober?
He is 4 years clean and sober, happily.
Yeah, congratulations to him and you. He is not with us, obviously, for the best possible reason. He's at work, right? Tell us what kept Matt away from the program today.
So Matt was so excited, Steve, that you were going to have us on today, and he was all ready to meet me, and we were going to be here on the phone together. And as our work has it, we're on standby all the time. As I said, if people either hear about us through a therapist or a provider or someone from the group, you know, calls and needs assistance, we're always on standby. So we're taking calls 24/7, which we do gladly. And so Matt has been working with a family for the last, over 3 weeks. And the family members were attending our group, one of our groups, and they wanted to intervene with their adult daughter. And that is what Matt's doing, because what we find is there's so much to this process of intervening compassionately and caringly with a family member. It's not necessarily what you see on TV, or it's not that somebody, you know, comes in the night and swoops them away, or it's not quote unquote tough love. I really do not care for that phrase at all. So Matt is actually doing an intervention with this family because the daughter is willing. And when that window opens, that window of willingness, you have to intervene right then, or it slams shut. It could be another 3 weeks. The danger in that is when you've reached a crisis state in this whole disease of substance use disorder and addiction, it becomes a life and death situation. And so, hoping that he's successful. He's been very successful because he comes from a place of compassion and experience. Mm-hmm. And so while he wanted to talk about his social media campaign and what he does with CARES, he was called away.
Well, and the fact that he hasn't come back during the interview is probably good, because that means
it is a good thing.
He's still at work. So, and I know finally that he's also got a social media campaign going. Tell us about that.
He does. Matt has spoken in so many different venues. He has made himself available to school groups and to, the state legislature and different programs and events. And he kept finding himself saying, everyone knows someone who's struggling. And it's really true that everyone does know someone. And so he developed a social media campaign sort of based on the Humans of New York, which has been exceedingly successful. Mm-hmm. And he got himself a photographer, a wonderful photographer, and he approached people to just share their stories. And he wanted it to be raw and unfiltered and just real. And he has a presence on both Facebook and Instagram. And people have told stories of recovery. We have stories, whether they are posted yet or yet to be posted. They are about people who've lost their loved ones. One really interesting stint, he went to a college campus. He went to Western Connecticut State University, and he just sat in the courtyard, his friend Ethan, played the guitar, and that just, it drew people to him, and he just interviewed people, and it was astounding. He tested his theory, mm-hmm. everyone knows someone, mm-hmm. because in the course of an hour, I think he got 15 individuals who had a connection somehow to substance use disorder. Mm-hmm. And it's a hope. The hope of this social media campaign is to just end stigma so that we can talk about this the way we talk about any other disease.
Any other disease. And, well, we're out of time, but I'm sorry we missed Matt, but I'm glad he's doing what he's doing. And I appreciate
your critical work. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate your time. Donna DeLuca, her organization is called the CARES Group. You can get more information about that, or you can call us and we'll turn you on. Donna, thank you so much. And you tell Matt we're going to have him back on again real soon.
Thank you so much, Steve. That'll be great.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. We'll be here next Saturday for Recovery Radio. Bye-bye.
This program is a paid commercial announcement and in no way represents the views of WPHT or its management.